Hey, what's going on? We're back again. It's Pat Steinberg along with you with another edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Welcome to Episode 5. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And on this Episode 5, we've got a treat for you. How about Hogan Lube as our guest this week? That's right. The legend, still the only Swedish-born player to ever score 50 goals in a single season. The 1989 Stanley Cup champion, Håkan Lube, sitting down with Brent Cron, Colin Patterson. And this week, it's Jamie McCown sitting in with the boys as well. Håkan in town recently, stopped by the Garrison Pub with the boys. We've got some great stories with Lube coming up. We'll hear from him growing up in Sweden, the differences between Sweden and the NHL, his path to Calgary, Battle of Alberta, winning a Stanley Cup, and a whole lot more. Looking forward to it. Thanks for being along with us here on the Flames Talk podcast feed, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we will start the conversation momentarily. But first, it's time for This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda. And This Week in Flames History, we're going back 36 years ago to April 15th of 1989, still one of the biggest goals in Calgary Flames history.
Lube shoots one in. They're after it again. Papinski going in. Score! The Calgary Flames have finally done it. Not a pitcher goal. It was centered by Papinski. It hit him. Stayed in front. And it's over.
Yep, it was April 15th, 1989, 36 years ago this week, when Joel Otto scored the overtime winner as the Flames won Game 7 of their first-round playoff series 4-3 over the Vancouver Canucks. That's right, they survived because Calgary finished 43 points ahead of the Canucks in the regular season, but were pushed to the absolute brink before Otto scored the series winner with 39 seconds to go in that first overtime period. And that was the toughest challenge the Flames had on their road to the Stanley Cup. They would start a second-round series with the LA Kings a few days later. They'd win that series in four games after being pushed to the brink in seven by the Vancouver Canucks. So 36 years ago this week, Joel Otto, overtime winner, still one of the biggest goals in Flames franchise history. That is This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Let's get right to it. Håkan Lube, he's a Flames legend. He's a Swedish legend. He was in town recently, sitting down with Brent Cron, Colin Patterson, and Jamie McCown there as well. And that's where it all started. Why was Håkan in town? Let's find out as the conversation begins right now.
What are you doing in town right now?
This is my hometown.
Yes.
You got to visit that every now and then.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Well, we're a bunch of guys, really good friends from Sweden, wanted to come over and see where I played, who I played with.
Yep. Like Patter.
Yeah. That's why they were so happy when they saw Patter.
Yeah, they go, oh, my God, you must have been really good, Luber.
Yeah.
Now, you know, watch NHL is always a big thing in Sweden, so took the opportunity to come over, watch a couple of games.
Do you still follow the NHL closely?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, you get your heart is a little bit split. A lot of heart in Calgary still. So you got to follow, see what happens, you know. So hoping all the time, make the playoffs, you know. And I work a little bit as a scout with them too, so it's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
You know, I want to start in how you all got into hockey. Because I know, I mean, a lot of, you know, European players, Swedes in particular, you guys play a lot of different sports too growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me growing up as a kid, it was baseball and it was hockey for me. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And I hated baseball. I was a little chubby. I was the catcher, right? You know, and I didn't move much. And my dad was my coach. And I'm like, my dad and I always got along except for baseball season, because he would be yelling at me and I'd be like, I hate baseball. I'm a hockey player, right? And so for your career growing up as a kid, not counting hockey, what other sports did you play?
Well, first of all, I came from a very small place, an island called Gotland. And sports was really big there, but we weren't that many there. played all kinds of sports. So everybody has to participate so we could get a team together. So it was a lot of soccer, played handball, an individual sport. I loved table tennis or pingis, ping pong. And, it was about 5-6 sports until I was 15.
Yeah.
That's when I made the big decision that hockey was my thing. Because everything was outdoors at that time, hockey, playing, you know, in minus 20, 25. But all of a sudden, we got this first indoor rink and when I was 15, I made a decision, I want to play hockey. And that's the story there.
Were you told that you had to make that decision? Or did you know that, like, you know, if I want to continue on with hockey, I have to shut everything down?
That's the big difference now. Because I made my own decisions.
Yeah.
Wherever I felt more comfortable, you know, that, and it just turned to be hockey, you know. But nobody told me. Like I said, you know, we needed everybody to get the teams together and all that, so.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, he's arrived. Mr. James McCowan.
The king just entered. Give me a hug.
We're on already.
Sorry,
Mr.
Cross.
We're 2 minutes in, and microphone's yours now, too, right? We're just... Did you do any sailing then too, growing up?
Oh yeah,
being on an island, yeah.
A lot. We had these small sailboats,
yeah.
The starters, so they called it. So I sailed a lot until about 14, 15 too. So I had to do something in the summer. So sailing was a big thing.
Now, speaking of you playing table tennis, do you guys have a ping pong table in the dressing room at all?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Who won? It's a tournament.
Luber was pretty strong out of the gate.
Yeah.
And then the rest of us low lice kept practicing and practicing and practicing when he wasn't around.
Well, and when I first came, I never thought I was going to say this, but I didn't see any balls at all in Canada. I don't know if you never treated a ball, football, soccer ball, ping pong ball. You know, I don't know what the hell these guys been doing.
Oh my God. You know, it wasn't until Luber used to kick our ass, and it wasn't until like 20 years later that I'm reading something on Luber and they go, oh, he was the junior championship in Sweden. He won. And I was like,
is that true?
You be freaking kidding me. Yeah. Yeah. We've been scammed years. How much money did he take off of you?
Yep.
Well, I was a lot like you. I pretended I didn't have any money. And
it worked.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I got hurt that one year. And then the following year I came back and they said, well, you guys got to keep working your left side all the time. So I learned how to play ping pong left-handed. I was actually better left-handed than I was right-handed. So it actually worked very well, you know. As you know, I've got great hands.
You know, you're unbelievable. They're made of stone, but they're good.
Yeah, they're.
And you don't back check, and you give the puck away at the blue line in every charity hockey. First shot on, that's a break.
Wow, that's very hurtful.
On there so far.
Very hurtful.
I thought we were sticking on with Luber.
Luber missed a puck one time too, you know.
I don't know that. I know.
No, don't remember.
No, I don't remember
that. No, did you take the boys for any money with ping pong, or was it just?
Like at that time, we didn't make any money, so it was hard to take anything from them. So.
Yeah.
It's different now.
So you're going to have to tell me if I'm saying this right. You played in Färjestad, right?
You got it right.
That's not bad, you know. Yeah. And
you did your research.
I did. Well, I had to listen to it the other night because I'd played with a handful of Swedes before.
Oh, yeah.
And your guys' English is always so fantastic. And then when you actually say Swedish things, it sounds like you're talking. Well, you are talking a completely different language, but it blows me away, right?
So
talk about your first season in Färjestad. How did who was actually more importantly, maybe some before we get there. A favorite player that you grew up watching that you would maybe model your game after or you looked up to, whether it's a hometown guy in Sweden or whether it's...
Well, hockey was pretty big, you know, especially the national team, but one of the players that really stuck out was Boris Alming.
Yeah.
He came up, you know, and he didn't play that many years in the big league before he came over here in 74 or something like that, but before that, he was a hero. He was a hero in Sweden, so kind of stuck. He was a defenseman, but still...
We had Lanny on too, and he would tell stories about Boria, and we just sit there and just everybody's quiet, just listening. He was quite an icon.
Well, you know what? Like growing up in Toronto, you know, obviously you watch the Maple Leafs all the time, and seeing Boria, he played such a different style because back then, you know, you had the Broad Street Bullies and all that. You had to be very physical. You had to have your stick up all the time. You're either getting punched or you're giving punches. And Boria didn't do that. I mean, he was just a hockey player, pure and simple. and the amount of abuse that he took
as a player.
You're right.
And, you know, it reminds me a little bit of when the Russians came over and we had Sergei Bryakin and Sergei Makarov.
We were there
for that. Makarov took so much abuse because he was a highly respected player. But he just wasn't like, I don't play this the goon game or whatever you want to call it. And the amount of respect that, you know, I think a lot of the players that played with those two guys, you know, it just grew and grew exponentially.
No, that's true. I was going to say about Borja down there. It was amazing when you, when I grew up and watch him play, and all of a sudden he came over to Calgary and he played in Toronto. It was almost sad to say, see when they came and played us, and they were so bad.
Yeah.
Toronto at that time was one of the worst teams in the whole league. And watching Borja, like Kooner was saying, he was fighting so hard. He was such a strong person. And I don't know, we beat him every time pretty much. One game back here in Calgary, I think we beat him like 10-3. And there were actually fans sitting in the stands with paper bags over their heads because they were so ashamed how bad the team was.
Yeah.
And then my hero was playing on the other team and we beat him all the time.
That was the Harold Ballard years, was it not?
It was.
And Harold, say whatever you want about Harold, all he cared about was the news, right? And his favorite line was, good news, bad news, as long as you're in the news. And
he was sitting down in the corner at the old Maple Leaf Garden.
In the bunker. They called it the bunker, right? And I went in there the one time when we were doing some stuff, and I going like, oh, this place has got to be unbelievably nice. It was terrible. Like there was nothing in it. There was a couple seats that they didn't use, and everything was just cement block. And I'm going, here's the guy, the owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs. In theory, in my time, what I thought was one of the richest guys in the world. Obviously, he wasn't, but very, very wealthy. Didn't spend $1,000 on that bunker.
No,
that's the way he was.
That was amazing.
Did you have any aspirations of coming over and playing in the NHL when you first started? Like, did you ever want to go overseas to play? Did that cross your mind?
No, never. Because it wasn't that, you didn't see too much about the NHL, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't have that on TV, was hardly in the papers. So we kind of knew that it was a really good league over here in North America, but didn't put too much attention to it. When Borja and Inge Hammerström and those guys start coming over, it started to get a little bit more because it was in the papers all of a sudden. And then it kind of just grew and grew. And I remember I got drafted. We had no clue what being drafted was. I got this envelope in the mailbox. It was a Calgary Flames shirt with number whatever, 8 or 9. And I wonder what the hell was that. And I came a paper with it and it said, you're drafted in the 9th round, 357th overall for the Calgary Flames. And I said, so what? I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
And then you know this is bragging. He got drafted.
Oh, I know.
Tyler and I never got drafted.
Suck on that one, guys. Yeah. He was looking at both of you when he said it too. And I got drafted. I didn't really care.
That hurt.
Was it in Swedish or was it in English?
It was in English.
Yeah.
But I knew English at that time already.
Yeah.
Good, eh?
But well done. But back then too, like Swedes, you guys all spoke English like fluently.
Well, it was our second language in school.
Yeah.
Since we were like 7, 8 years old, so it was good.
No,
but I got to tell you the story. The 2 years later, Dave Poile, who was the assistant general manager here, he came over. So after the game, there's one guy telling me there's somebody who wants to meet you out there. So I'm getting dressed, getting out there. And there's Dave Poile with his long coat, standing there waiting for me. And he presented himself and he said he was the assistant gentleman for Calgary. And he asked me, you want to come and play with us? Play what? Yeah. I didn't even know he was.
Yeah, well, no idea he was with hockey. No. He was like, what do you want? Yeah.
No, we were thinking of signing you. Are you willing to come? And I said, I couldn't believe it. So I went home and I told my wife, at that time already wife, maybe we're going to Canada. And she said, no way. Where is that? Calgary. So we went to get this map, and they're like, oh, it's way out there in the west. I don't know about that.
So how old were you at that time?
20, could have been 21.
21?
Yeah. When he talked to me, 21, 22.
What?
But it was, yeah.
Fun. What made you come over?
I think it was, I had a great year, the year when I signed. I played 36 games, scored 76 or 78 points. And I thought the next step was, you know, maybe a try. So I said to my wife, let's go try 1 year, see what it's like. You can always go back. And plus, you know, everybody at that time had a job in Sweden. Job on the side of playing hockey. I think we were making at that time $400 to $500 a month to play hockey. So we had to work.
Yeah.
And my wife had to work, you know, to keep a living. So, and then all of a sudden somebody said, well, if you sign, you can get a signing bonus of about $100,000 and you can get $110,000 to play. So all of a sudden, $210,000 to play hockey. I said, we got to take that chance. Yeah. So signing, go over. Next is history.
How is that compared to your signing bonus?
Yeah, it was only triple times three, so that'd be nine times, yeah.
So what I just heard was his signing bonus was like 15,000, yours is 200,000.
Good
for you. Yeah.
Well, poor Patter. Although when you were in Slovenia, you scored like 95 points too,
no
right?
Big deal.
Any place in Europe you could score points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what? Get on the power play. And
every country starts with an S.
What was your job then when you were back home?
We had the team Färjestad that I played with. We had a sports shop, so I worked there. And then I wanted to educate myself to be a carpenter.
Yeah.
So I went one full year to learn how to carpenter.
That just blows my mind, just sitting there thinking about I started playing in the American Hockey League, I think it was 2003, 2004, and you know, just listening to you guys having jobs doing that, like, it blows my mind.
Yeah. Huh?
So you'd make the decision to come to Calgary, and you get to Calgary, you land. Mm. What's your first thoughts of the city of Calgary?
Well, first of all, landing, we came into the terminal and said nobody was there. Nobody was there, and all of a sudden there's a gentleman standing there, so he's kind of looking around, and then obviously maybe he recognized. Or maybe this is the guy I'm picking up. It was Al Coates.
Oh!
So he's there. He's welcoming. He says, hi, Mr. Lube. My name is Al Coates. I'm taking care of you. I said, well, okay, that's great. So you come in. You get set at the West End. You know, got this envelope with you. This is when training camp starts. You have to do this and that. And so got great help from Al, but didn't know what to expect at all. First day in training camp, I think we had about 83 or 85 people coming into training camp, and nobody really said anything. They picked up something. I think we had four or five teams. We played against each other, and we practiced in the morning, played in the afternoon, and then all of a sudden, people were just going left and right. Somebody got sent down, someone got to get cut, and all that happened, and this is so new to me, you know, what's happening. I remember I was rooming with somebody, And all of a sudden, we were not on the same team. And then I came to the dressing room, and there was a bag there, and it was his bag. And I said right away, I can't believe you got cut. I thought you were such a good player. All said he was sad, so he left. Lanny came up to me. He said, don't show that kind of emotions. It could be you the next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Whoa.
Shouldn't feel sorry for anybody.
Yeah.
So it was kind of different.
No kidding. Yeah.
So, Luber, you went to training camp. Was that the year that we ran around the horse track? Were you part of that?
You tell me about that.
Yeah. Explain that. When you talk to your friends back home and you explain what you're doing.
I tell them all the time. My first training camp come in and there's a test. They say, well, what test? It's a running test. I said, I can't run, you know, I was the worst runner in Sweden. So, yeah, we got to go three laps around the horse track. And I said, no way. 1,609 times three. Oh, my God. So as I'm stepping out there, I think we had 63 guys running. And the first thing when I step on the track is Kent Nilsson. He's standing beside us. Say, why aren't you running? No, bad knee, you know. And then he starts laughing. He was never going to. So get out there on the line, guns fired, away we go. And about, I don't know, 25 minutes later, I come in as number 62. There was one goalie behind me.
Yeah. Oh, you can't lose to a goalie.
Running on the track, you know, it was soil. It was so deep, and it was so, I couldn't believe it. I said, why am I here?
And that was real. Like, you guys weren't, that was an actual test. You weren't screwing with them.
Oh, no. No, everybody's there.
You mentioned Kent Nielsen. Did he have anything through you coming over to North America to come play in Canada? Did you speak with him at all?
No, not at all.
Did you know him before you got
No, I didn't know him at all.
No.
He left really early.
Yeah.
Because he went to Winnipeg and played in the WHA.
Yeah.
So I didn't know him at all. But that's what Coachy told me today. Yesterday I met him and he said, you remember when you first came? And I asked you, well, you probably know Kent Nilsson. And I said, no, I know no Kent Nilsson.
Yeah, who is that guy? Yeah.
So, well, I got to know him pretty well. So.
How was, you know, you speaking to about Boris Salming having to go through a tough time physically getting beaten up or, you know, taking his shots all the time. Mm. What was it like for you to come back and play in the National Hockey League? Were guys coming after you too, knowing that they saw that big Jofa helmet ripping around and they were coming after you or what?
Well, you know what? First of all, I think when I signed with the Flames, I think there was 19 Swedes playing in the league. So it was not very many.
Yeah.
And all the stories you heard about, there was chicken Swedes, you know, go home, don't steal our beer, our broths, and all that. So they heard that all the time.
For sure.
I think that the most important thing was the teammates, you know, taking care of you. So I thought that was the backup was unbelievable. You felt pretty comfortable.
Good.
And then, of course, you know, some games you were a little scared because we had the bench clearing brawls and all that. We had a few before they banned that. So, but I don't know. You got used to it then.
Who was your first roommate in the NHL?
Mike Vernon.
Oh, you know,
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
for him.
Yeah.
I got rid of him pretty quick. So actually, I got my, what I call my father, Mike Eves.
Oh,
he really took care
good.
Of me. He was more of a schoolboy.
Yeah.
He was really good. He made me order everything so I could learn English pretty fast. So he was good. He was really good. Now, Vernon, he was fun.
Yeah.
Didn't see too much of him, but that's a different story.
Just a game time. Right?
Luber's saying all this stuff because he's going back to Sweden. He doesn't get to see him again.
Boom, just toss the grenades.
Yeah, just a grenade after grenade.
No, that's kidding. That's good. That was good.
Well, I can tell you one thing, having played with both Kenta and Luber, and watching the way they play, both very skilled players, but one player wasn't afraid to back check, and the other was. And the guy sitting at his table was the one I'd like to have on my team. I tell you, Kent, had so much ability. It's just some days you go, I'm not playing today. No. Like I'm dressing, but I'm not playing. And
when you heard what Wayne Gretzky said, he said, you know, if he wanted to play every night, he would be the best player in the NHL. Oh. And I agree with that because he had unbelievable talent. When he was on fire, when he scored left and right, and passes he made, and it was. Unbelievable level. But then, like Kuhner said, every now and then, take time off.
Yeah.
So my first year, or like first half year, we're in Vancouver, and that's back before you got the meals and stuff, and we were having like bar down and all this other stuff, and I don't know what they're talking about. And so he comes over with a couple of other guys, there's like six of them, and they say, hey, you want to play to see who pays for lunch? I go, oh, yeah, well, yeah, sure, why not? I got to fit right in. Like first shot, I don't even think he was looking at the net. Ding, and he just leaves the ice. Like, and goes, well, just let me know who's buying me lunch, right? And it's like, well, okay. The rest of us are, it's like 12 shots, 13 shots. Well, if it's not by 15, we'll split it, right? It's like,
unbelievable.
What did you notice first coming over to practice in North America, too? Were the practices different, or how was, because you were playing more games, how was the practices first off?
They're different.
Yeah, how so?
We put a lot of effort into practice back home, you know. That was educational, very, very important. Here was more like go, more intense, you know. So it was different. But it just, right away, it felt so much more professional towards the games. You know, back home we only played 36 games. Practice was so important to really learn the game and how to play together and all that, you know, the structures and all that. So, but over here it was... To me, I was used to say that it was a lot easier for me to come over here and play on a smaller rink than go back, because I went back and played a few years. It's tougher to come back to play on a big rink. Because here it's an easier game. Just go, you know. And
yeah.
I really did like that.
How did you adjust to the travel?
Well, it wasn't bad.
No.
You know, because you're flying all the time. You know. I always used to sit on the bus for 4, 5, 6 hours to games in Sweden. So that was actually, it was a relief to get on the plane. No problems really boarding planes as it is today, you know, we went through fairly quick. So it didn't bother me at all, pretty much.
And then too, just with playing more games, did that affect you in any way at all too? Playing more often or not really?
Not really. Again, because we had work beside playing hockey. Yeah. Now it's only playing hockey, so I never thought it was any tough times.
So some of your line mates in Calgary. Do you remember the first line you played on in Calgary?
I played as Mike Eves was my center.
Yep.
For quite a few games.
Yeah.
So and then we switched kind of. Maybe I even played with Colin some games.
You really elevated hockey into the stratosphere.
Stardom.
I got rid of him pretty quick too.
Yeah. Go room with Bernie.
Wow. Yeah. When you told Luber, just say whatever you want. Yeah. This is unbelievable. And another thing. Patterson probably cost me 20 goals.
Right? You didn't get rid of Jamie though, eh?
No.
He was good.
He if he could have, but yeah. I played.
But he needed you to pay for lunch, though, so you couldn't hit the crossbar.
Yeah, I couldn't. I paid for a lot of lunches.
1983-84, all rookie team, you two, the NHL all rookie
there
team.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Were you not on that?
No.
Sorry.
I was one.
And there's a pretty good guy who won the Rookie of the Year that year too, Stevie Eiserman.
Oh wow.
He's okay.
Who's he?
Yeah, I never heard of that guy before either.
Got a few points. Bit of a floater though, really.
What did that mean to you, being on the all-rookie team or rookie team in the first year in the National Hockey League?
Well, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was big. Yeah, we've had a few Swedes that were knocking on the door to get Rookie of the Year. Mats Näslund was here. It was pretty good. And so getting picked there, it was amazing.
Were you already back in Sweden when you learned that you had won the Rookie of the Year or the part of the rookie team?
Yeah, I think I was back in Sweden.
Yeah, so the story goes, I was back at school at Ohio State. Al Coates, right, who did everything. Like, he shined shoes, he did it all. He calls me up and says, hey, hard to believe, but you're part of the rookie team. So that, and I go, oh, okay, that's good. Does that mean I get a bonus? No, nothing like that. So I fly up to Montreal to represent the team, and Coatesy comes with me. And we're sitting there, and they're talking. The whole thing only lasts like 30 minutes. And I go, I wonder what's going to go on, whatever. And then they give us the watch. You got the watch?
Yeah,
I still have the watch.
What was it? What was it?
I can't. It was gold. Yeah. I don't know.
Climax.
Indigo.
It was not a Climax. And I wore it for a little while, but then I don't really wear watches. But anyways, just the other day, Coach and I were talking about it. And he goes, that thing's probably worth some money nowadays. And I was like, yeah. But he was almost mad that I got this because it's the first year. And it's like, so you're going to, I'll just make up a number. It was a $3,000 watch. That was more than my bonuses. Not Luber's. Luber's had big bonuses.
I love that.
Or keep the watch.
Exactly. Just giving them away.
Yeah. I need a Rolex.
I'm sorry. Timex is spelt wrong. It's Rolex. Come on, man.
It's on fire.
All right. We're just getting started with our conversation this week. It's Hokan Lube as the guest of honor on this week's program. What an awesome conversation. What a treat to have Hokan Lube in town sitting down with Brent Cron, Colin Patterson, and Jamie McCown. As we continue along on the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, and before we go any further, it's time for Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best of your oil field production budget. OSY's Vapor Tight Package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY Tank, and we've got a Hokan Lube themed question for you. As we know, as has been mentioned, Hokan is still the only Swedish-born player to score 50 goals in an NHL season. But there is one Swedish player who has scored 49 goals in a single season in the NHL. What player scored 49 goals? What Swedish player scored 49 goals in a single season? We'll give you a few seconds to come up with the answer. All right, did you get it? And I'll give you just a couple more seconds. I'll give you a hint. He's a former Flame as well. Does that help at all? I'll give you 3, 2, one. The correct answer is the Magic Man. Second week in a row, I believe, the correct answer to Flames trivia has been Kent Nielsen. He scored 49 goals with the Flames during the 1980-81 season, so did not get to the Magic 50 mark. Still, Håkanlund, the only Swedish-born player to score 50 in a single season, but Kent Nielsen with the Flames fell just one short with 49 in 1980-81, and that is Flames trivia brought to you by OSY Rentals. As we continue along, our conversation with Håkanlund is just getting started. This is the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. More with Håkanlund as we continue. All right, let's keep it going. It is the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. This is episode 5. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this is all available as part of your Flames Talk podcast feed, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get them. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And we've got lots more to get to with Håkanlund. And more great stories to get to with Håkan in just a second. But first, it's time for Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And we're not going all that far back this week, because this week we're focusing in on former Flame Mason Raymond, the Calgary product, Cochrane product, played two seasons in the AJHL with the Camrose Kodiaks before being drafted in the second round by Vancouver. Spent most of his NHL career with the Canucks, followed by a season with the Maple Leafs, and eventually signed as a free agent with his hometown Flames, where he tallied 16 goals over 86 games. He's now permanently settled here in the city. Mason Raymond is active in agriculture and cattle, and in 2022 expanded into the auto industry by purchasing a GM dealership in Cochrane. He remains involved in the community through various boards, enjoys coaching his son's hockey team, and is a very active member now of the Flames alumni. Mason Raymond on Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. As we get back to the conversation, Håkanlund sitting down with Brent Cron, Colin Patterson, and Jamie McCown this week. Some more great stories to come. And Håkanlund's first season with the Flames way back in 1983-84, his head coach at that time, the legend Badger Bob Johnson. Let's pick up the conversation right now.
What was it like playing for Bob Johnson when you got to Calgary?
Well, so afterwards, you know, you make a reflection on what happened, really. So Bob was, you know, an educator, you know. He was really good at all the details, you know, giving you the old instructions, what to do and not to do, get called in after 10 games, rated every game. How he even could get all the players and rate them, I don't know. But he did that.
But what, he'd have you come in and you have to go through, like, 10 games and give yourself a grade?
Yeah. Good things, bad things, skating, three. It was different. But he was, like I said, very educational, which kind of switched totally when Terry Crist came in. So he was totally opposite. So.
Yeah.
But it was good to see both sides.
What do you mean by that exactly?
I think you can tell me, Kuna.
You had your fights with him.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I mean, I agree with you. Badger Bob, he, like, coming right out of college, he's used to teaching 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And, you know, I think he had more fun with the young guys because there were so many of us that were under 25. Mm. The older guys maybe didn't listen to him quite as much because they'd already gone through the ringer a little bit. But learned a lot from him. And, and, you know, probably there's a few guys that owe their careers to him. If he'd been drafted or you'd been up with a different team,
yeah.
I'm just thinking like a Philadelphia or something. Yeah. You might have been there for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You're down the minors. You're never coming back up.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Mm. I would have been one of them.
That's right.
But you think about our first year. I mean, you had played the year before, but you didn't play enough games to get out of the rookie status. But
22 games.
I think we had 7 or 8 rookies on our team. You know, we had Dan Quinn, Richard Crum, you know, Chopper, and, you know, there was a
Kerry Wilson there, too?
Kerry Wilson came up at the end.
That's right.
So, yeah, it was, I mean, we had a lot of guys.
To be honest with you, that's where it all started, I think. Yeah. Young team that really wanted to develop, have a great coach that helped you on the way, and then they kind of turn exactly when it's supposed to turn, get a couple of more really skilled players in, get a new coach that were more bang, bang, bang. I think that set the whole thing up for 89, I would say.
Do you remember your first NHL goal? Did Patters set you up? Did he give you a great opportunity? Or?
I can't remember that, but I remember
from the bench. I said, you can go out this time. You go.
But I remember my first goal, that's for sure.
Walk us through it.
First game in Vancouver, and we won the game 5-3. I scored the goal, and the best thing, or the most fun thing afterwards, the reporter asked me, how many goals do you think you're going to score? And I said, I scored my first game. How many games are there?
Cockiness, I like it.
I don't think he understood the joke. No.
Yeah. And, you know, now you got your first goal, but like, is there a memorable goal that you scored in your career that when you look back and you scored a lot, you were a scorer, you were a skilled guy, but is there one or two that you could pick out in your mind that are like, that was a good one for me?
Well, it's a long time ago, but of course, my 50th goal was, yeah, you know, and the last game of the season against Minnesota. It's, you get reminded of it, and I've seen it a couple of times. I saw it yesterday. I was on TV, and they showed it. So, of course, that's going to be the one. It's hard to remember anything else here.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was reading up on you, like I said, I grew up watching you play. And you guys have mentioned Rich Crom. Rich Crom coached me with the Calgary Hitmen here in town for two seasons. But 50 goals as a Swedish-born player, first one to do it.
Two shorthanded goals within 7 seconds. Perry Bears and Håkan Lube.
Oh,
it's so true. Is that still the record?
I don't know.
It's got to be the record.
Two goals in 7 seconds?
We say so.
No, that's sure it is.
You know why?
So you remember it.
Because
I think it was 7 seconds.
The only thing I could say I did something.
Yeah.
But I think Paul Ranheim got one in an empty net.
So
they were short. He scored one shorthanded goal, and then the net was empty, so he put it into an empty net. We had the goalies in.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so we are the best.
Yeah. You're still the best.
Still the best. You got 5 hat tricks that year, too, didn't you?
Oh, isn't that something?
And I couldn't believe it.
8 shorthanded goals. Are the players doing that nowadays?
No, not at all. No.
That was your first year?
Show me the money. No.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure.
8 shorthanded goals. What, is it a 5-on-3 and then you just hung around the red line the whole time? Do you remember who those 5 had? I was trying to find that out the other day.
The one team I was called Hartford, I think.
Yeah.
Scored one against them.
Oh, yeah.
A hat trick.
Oh, so we're going to go through the first time you guys went through the Stanley Cup, right? In 86 there, right? You got a taste of it. What was that like getting ready for the NHL playoffs?
No, I think the whole story was that, to be honest with you, I think that we're really drove us to become a really good team was actually the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
You know, they were so successful. We were chasing them all the time. We wanted to get better. We hated to lose against them. It just made us a little bit better by the year. So in 86, you know, I think that was a great year for us to go all the through to the finals. I think that was the key to win in 89.
Right.
We would have won to win in 86 too, but we learned a lot from it, I think.
Well, you know, and we've been lucky enough to have a lot of you guys on already, and more are coming. But everybody brings up the Oilers and how important it was to get through them and what that battle actually meant to the players. They're talking about bus rides going back from Edmonton to Calgary where you could hear a pin drop on the bus. Everybody's quiet, focused on the game. You knew it was a big one either end. And you talk to some of the Oilers players, too, and they were the exact same way coming to Calgary. I mean, what was your first experience with the Battle of Alberta?
Well, I think that the Edmonton games were maybe the most scary ones because you knew it was going to be fighting and it was going to be hard to play, and also that they were such a good team. Could you outscore your, you know, 7-8 goals? So it was challenging games.
Yeah.
And you learn from that. That's mostly what I remember. So
did you have Fierzy's number at all? Did you get score a bunch of goals from Grant Fuhr, or did he have yours?
Well, the amazing thing was that he was a really good goalie. But if you look at goals against, he was probably at 350, 360.
Yep.
But he was still great because they always won 8-4 or 9-5. But, of course, All of us scored against him.
Yeah.
We ran them out. We ran them out of town.
Even Patter.
Oh, yeah.
Perry, did you get the one when we were sitting on the bench? Was that?
Yeah, you know, yeah. We all scored on Fuhr, but I'm the only one who scored well on the bench.
What do you mean? You were just the last person to touch and they shot it in their own net, or how did that work?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, I knew that. I now that you guys bring it up, I remember it. But
no, you have to. That's the most famous goal in history of the NHL.
I love this guy. Yeah.
Why is it the most?
I'm not lying.
Game 7, 86. Yeah. Against the Oilers. That's what beat the Oilers, the winning goal.
I did not know that.
There we
that
go.
Was the winning goal. Series winning goal.
So how did you celebrate when they told you?
Yeah, but that Fuhr was, he would come up with an unbelievable save, but he would let a weak one in every game.
Yeah.
I don't know how many shutouts the guy had. I can't imagine he had too many.
No.
But,
well, he didn't have a lot of defensive support.
Those guys,
you know, the old joke about tapping the goalie on the pads, see you after the game.
Yeah.
That really was an Edmonton Oiler, you know, thing.
You're right.
They had a few defensemen that weren't very good, but they were big and tough. That's their job. And, you had Coffee there, but he didn't spend any time in a defensive zone either. So on any given shift, there might be only one defenseman back there. It was probably Dr. Randy Gregg.
No, I'll tell you a story. It was, I met a guy in Germany many years ago. So he came up to me. I didn't really recognize him. And he said, maybe you remember me. I was the only guy that wasn't up ice at all. Don Jackson. Oh, yeah. He wasn't a very good skater.
I was ready to fight Pepper. Right? Those guys must have fought 10 times, at least.
Speaking of fighting, did you ever get into a fight? Do you ever throw a punch? Do you ever have to get in there one time?
No, not really.
No.
But I saw a few really, really good fights. One of the better ones. You remember that one? In Vancouver.
Oh, Ronnie DeLorme?
I, you know, you watch that today, you can't believe it.
Yo.
Uber kept saying, I'll take him. I'll take him.
And I was singing that song, I'm still standing. Yeah. And it was just punch by punch. And I said, oh, what?
Yeah.
And I remember the next day when he came with the sunglasses on. I said, Kuna, why do you wear that sunglasses? Took him off.
Oh.
It was totally, it was so. But that was a fight. That hurt a little bit.
How did that, I mean, and this is going to be a stupid question, I'm full of them, but how did that start? I watched the video on YouTube, I've seen you throw, but you see nothing of what happened before that.
Well, you know what, this is kind of like the one question I get asked all the time, and we were kind of to the left of the goalie, and there was some sort of like general scrum, so it's going to be like a five guys grabbing five guys. I went to grab somebody, I don't even know who it was, he just skated away as fast as he could, hopped off the ice onto the bench, and then back then, I guess you're apparently allowed to jump on, so on comes DeLorme, and I'm literally looking at this guy, and he's like 5'11", maybe 6 foot, and I'm going like, hey, you don't know who I am. And then he's going, I don't think you know who I am, and I'm going, of course I don't know who you are. I'm fresh out of college, and like, I don't know who the hell you are. And sure enough, we kind of were joking back, or I shouldn't say joking, talking back and forth for about 40 seconds or something, kind of dancing, and then he starts throwing punches, and I think he hit me like 3 or 4 times before I threw my first punch. It's like that guy had fought before, apparently.
I watched it. I was at the Flames poker tournament a while ago, and I was showing some of the younger guys. I was sitting in the back. Google, they were talking about fighting. Like, you have to look at this fight. Like, this is just straight to the face. You can't feel it in the moment, but you can feel it afterward, eh?
Well, I was lucky enough to knock his helmet off, too, and you go, well, how'd I do that? By jamming your knuckles against the helmet somehow, right? And then, so the next day, it's like, oh, why can I not do up my shirt, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, because, and then a lot more respect for fighters after that, because I was looking, and fast forward to when I played with Ty Domi, of all people, and Wendell Clark. Like, Wendell Clark was like 1-2 punches, and the fight was over. Ty Domi, he took so much, so many punches to the head, but he won a lot of the fights. And but you just, like, looked at his head later, you go, like Probert hit you like 30 times right in the head, the bald part of your head. Like, how are you even standing right now? Apparently, as the saying goes, he had a cement head.
Like, hey, you know, I wanted to go back to you. You guys talked about the horse track and doing the fitness tests around the horse track and dirt. You know, like, I can't run on a beach. Like, I can't run at all, really, essentially. What was there? Was the fitness testing different between Calgary and Färjestad? Like, what was that all about?
Well, we didn't have any fitness tests at all.
Yeah.
But I've heard of it when I came over, so. But you see, you got a little nervous.
Yeah.
Scared. Because he didn't know how much that meant to the coaches. If you're not in great shape, are you going to get sent home? So it was kind of scary.
Yeah.
But there was the old-fashioned one, you know, like running or push-ups and stuff like that. So
nothing great.
It's changed quite a bit to now.
I think me and Roman Turek still might have the record for the sit and reach. That was my favorite test. Was this just the sit and reach? That was it.
What, eight inches? What was it?
reach for the beer?
Yeah. He was good at that too. Yeah, really good.
Do you remember when they started putting us into the tank? With what? The nose plug and trying to get your body fat. And you're in the tank, and I'm going like, this is not hockey. Like, what the hell is going on here? Not that I knew anything about working out.
And you can't smoke anymore?
Yeah, I couldn't smoke
Like what?
My Marlboro?
Yeah, you keep having your Marlboro Reds sitting in the dressing room? Yeah.
How'd you get rid of my cowboy hat?
Oh, man. Like, you didn't smoke when you played, did you?
No, never did. No, but I came from Sweden.
Yeah.
Quite a few players smoked.
Yeah, chewed though, for sure.
We had a goalie, he had to smoke every break.
Yeah.
So he came in, so he went in the sauna. He was smoking in the sauna, so that was...
Well, you guys love the sauna over there, don't you?
Well, the Finns more than us.
You guys. Yeah. You guys. Yeah.
You made me feel small.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Swedes, the Finns go sauna every time. They just love it. I love it now too. It helps so I don't have to work out. It just sweats out the booze.
You got yourself a sauna?
No, I want to work steam room.
Oh.
Every morning, go into the steam, sweat it out.
Nice.
That's not a bad plan. Back to the 86 run there, you guys came up against the goalie Patrick Waugh. What was that like playing against him when he was on fire in the Stanley Cup final?
Well, it's hard. Every time you play against something that's hard to beat.
Yeah.
Now he was on his head for sure. And of course, he became one of the world's leading goaltenders. So.
Yeah.
And I think Montreal overall was just a... It was a powerhouse, you know, with 24 Stanley Cups, you know, and all that. It was kind of, I don't know. And then sometimes when the first time you come there, you don't really know how to pay the price, so to speak. And then all of a sudden it's over and you lost.
Yeah.
But like I said before, you know, you learn so much from it. If you get a second chance, then you know you're prepared in a different way. So, you know, if you're going to lose, you know you're going to lose against something that's really good.
Was there a favorite rink? Do you like playing in?
You know what? I thought all rinks were really an experience. Coming to the Chicago Stadium, I remember one time, it was just unbelievable. The organ they had, when they start playing the national anthems, couldn't even think. You know, we were just mesmerized. And one time, I don't know if you remember that, we were in the dressing room, I think it was in the playoffs, you know, they had the big stairs up. And we were standing down, I think it was going up to the second period, and all of a sudden we start taking the first step. There was a chair out in the stands. So we come up, we look up to the right. There was the biggest fight I've ever seen in the stands. So everybody's going to play the second period of the playoffs, and all of a sudden everybody's looking at the fight. Go, yeah. So Chicago Stadium was nice.
Yeah.
Boston Gardens, small place. That's history. I can remember back and say, that's a lot more personality in those rinks than today. They're nice rinks today, but there was something special.
All different, like the Odd in Buffalo, the Maple Leaf Gardens, Boston Gardens, all different shapes and sizes. Yeah. And board. Joe Louis Arena, I was fortunate enough to be on there. Like you know, the bounces off the Joe Louis Arena, too, was crazy. I mean, I know you played there,
but Jaden, those were palaces compared to one arena in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
The Checker Dome.
Okay.
It was terrible. First of all, we're NHL players. And we have to have two different dressing rooms that each hold like nine guys, but we're jamming like 12 in on each side. They got the block out at the bottom because when they're hosing down the dressing room, the water goes out into the hallway. And it was so hot there during the springtime that literally you'd be in the middle of the game and suddenly the referee would have to blow it dead and say, okay, everybody come out. Don't skate around fast, but just skate around the ice to raise up the fog. Because you literally couldn't see across the ice, and pucks were flying. Like, we weren't wearing masks back then. You had to do something. But it was like 100, well, Fahrenheit, it was like 110 degrees outside. It was hotter inside.
What about the old Winnipeg? I mean, I'm from Manitoba. I got to get one in here. The old Winnipeg Arena with big picture of the Queen on there. That was a beautiful rink, eh?
Nobody no? playing there. No. Nobody. Well, first of all, you don't want to go to Winnipeg in the middle of the winter for anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I hated playing there.
That was one of the old arenas where they used to have the penalty box right beside the home box.
Yep.
And like people don't even think about it now, but it's such an advantage because you'd get in a fight or it's like 2-2. They love to go 2-2. They would literally just hop into their own bench and suddenly they're on a power play. You got to skate all the way across and you got 10 seconds on the power play every single time.
That's true.
We've kind of gone through your 50 goals, right? There was a tremendous 5 hat tricks 1 year, right? You scored goals with your eyes closed. You get to your last season with the Calgary Flames. And before we get to that, I know you guys had briefly mentioned Terry Crisp, you know, going from Bob Johnson to Terry Crisp. What were your first impressions of Crispy when he came to the club?
Well, I think it was more what you expected from a coach in the NHL.
Yeah.
There was more screaming,
yeah.
More direct, you know, not always well thought through what he was going to say. So it was a lot of ineffection, which is sometimes it's great. Sometimes you get a little saddened. Hear things that you didn't want to hear. But it was kind of a push, you know. I mean, it really kept us on our toes, I think, you know. So,
yeah.
Man, that was fun, hey? That is our chat with the legendary Hokin Lube. Great stories from Hokin and a great job from Brent Cron and Colin Patterson, our host. Thanks to Jamie McCown for stopping by and hanging out as well. And that was a lot of fun. And you just keep getting great conversations on the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles as we start to wrap things up. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. Thanks to Hokin. Thanks to Brent, Colin, and Jamie. My name is Pat Steinberg, and can't wait to do this again. Stay tuned for the next episode, and be well.